is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What a weekend in sports. Xander Schauffele, the bridesmaid, no more. Two road teams taking game sevens to advance to the NBA's conference finals. Plus today, OTA is underway for 21 teams in the NFL. We've got a lot to hit and two full hours to do it as we welcome you into this Monday edition of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. I'm Stormy Bonantoni alongside the one and only Michael Lombardi. How was the weekend for you, my friend? What's going on?
It's awesome. Game seven, the Preak this Saturday night. I mean, you know, that was a busy weekend when you start adding all these sporting events together in game seven. One game kind of was disappointing. Who would have thought the Pacers would have set a record for shooting in the Garden? But like Rick Carlisle told the team afterwards, you made history. Winning in this arena in a game seven is impressive, and the Pacers deserve all the credit because they convincingly won. And then somebody corralled this Timberwolves team. My Lord, you know. No wonder why the owner wants to buy the team back. He never experienced all this success before Glenn Taylor, and now he wants to get his team back. I mean, it was remarkable. Down 20 to the Nuggets on the road and come back to win that. Two road teams win. What a weekend, Stormy.
Absolutely.
And where were you, by the way? And you were busy too.
Yes. So meanwhile, in addition to all of the action that we just dove into, we've also got the UFL underway and the postseason getting cemented. I was in St. Louis yesterday with the Battlehawks. And by the way, as far as spring football goes, the environment they have in spring football is unlike any other. They are in a class of their own. And the fact that they're in the postseason this year after not making it last year, and an opportunity, if they're able to keep winning, to have the championship game there in the Battle Dome in St. Louis is going to be pretty cool. So that was fun. I had a great game and a great day yesterday. We'll dive into a lot of this behind the counter coming up in 30 minutes. Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata in Atlantic City, is going to stop by as he always does on a Monday. And VSiN's own NFL analyst, former wide receiver in the league, Mike Pritchard, stopping by in hour two. But let's get back to the basketball here, Michael, because put everything I said about the Nuggets last week in the bad take jar with how things ultimately came through last night. I mean, you mentioned the deficit down 15. Up 15 at half, up 20 in the second half as they extend that lead. And like a vault baby, locked down the Minnesota Timberwolves, and that league's top defense came to play in a big way. They end up winning 98-90, upset as a 4.5-point dog. Total stays under that 200.5. And Michael, not only was this just like a big deficit to overcome for the Timberwolves, no team had ever overcome that type of deficit at halftime in NBA playoff history to win a game seven. What stood out to you most about how they did it?
Well, they did it without Anthony Edwards. I mean, that's what stood out to me, was that, you know, they switched and put Naz Reid over there on the Jokic and slowed him down, forced him to have a bad shooting night. And then Reid stepped off offensively, and the team just kind of came together, you know, with Karl Anthony Towns and Reid guarding both of them. And so their defense really improved in the second half. And as Mike Malone said, that was the difference. I mean, their defense really, I was really unsure of it, because they were the best defensive team, or one of the best in the league. And then for two games, 4 and 5, that we weren't sure what the hell happened to them, but they adjusted. And everybody, it was a true team effort, because when your best player doesn't play well offensively, and you still win the game on the opponent's court, that's a pretty impressive statement.
True. And I mean, if I told you going in, Jokic and Jamal Murray are going to have 34 and 35 points respectively, Joker's going to go for 34, 19, and 7, you're thinking that the Nuggets win this game with ease and it's no problem. But the way that the Timberwolves were able to step up defensively in the second half, to your point, they go on those runs. It was a 60-32 run led by that 28-9 run in the third quarter. And it was just a different level. And Michael, now, and we'll talk about the Knicks-Pacers series in a moment, but now you look toward the NBA finals picture, big picture, and the Boston Celtics, who are an odds-on -150 favorite to win it all right now. Denver was the one team, to me, I thought could beat them. They had proven that they could in the regular season, going 2-0 in those games. And now Boston's just got a road paved for them, it seems like, to go all the way.
Well, I was told by somebody in the league a month ago, the three best teams in the league were Boston, Minnesota, and Denver. We're going to find out. Look, this Dallas team, I don't think you can take them lightly. They have two great players on their team in Luka and Kyrie Irving. And then if they can get Kleber back, which he's coming off the separated shoulder, he's been doing a lot of work. Supposedly, they believe, the Mavericks do, that they'll get him back early in the series, perhaps for game one. And if they can do that, that's certainly with Lively and their team. I mean, they have enough size to match up to the Timberwolves, plus they know how to play them. And look, I think the Timberwolves are growing by leaps and bounds. I mean, that second half to hold the Nuggets to 37 points, you could just feel their confidence on that court. And you could just tell that, hey, we're just not Anthony Edwards' team. We're a great team to begin with. That's impressive. Dallas is going to have to beat the team, not beat the player.
No question about it. The Nuggets now, by the way, the fifth consecutive defending champion to fail to reach the conference finals. You mentioned Michael Malone. Let's hear an understandably tense Michael Malone after the game.
Next question, man. The season's over. That's what's hard. Being up 20. The season's over. You don't understand that. The season's over. It's hard. Stupid-ass questions.
The question that he referred to as the stupid-ass question was how hard it is to absorb a loss like that when you're up 20 in the second half. And yeah. I think it's a completely reasonable and understandable question to be asked in that moment, but you also understand where Malone is coming from, that he's fresh off the court and he's pissed off about the way that his team closed that thing out.
I mean, you play it at home, you have a 20-point lead in the second half, and you let a team rally back, and you can't put the ball in the basket no matter how you do it, and you score 37 points in the second half total. And, you know, you get two good games. You know, now we know there was a moment there where Murray wasn't really scoring, but you get two good game. You get a good game from Murray, a good game from the Joker, and you still can't get it done. And I think to me, it's frustrating. You know, it's frustrating. I think their bench has proven out through this series. Braun came in and played, but they had no real bench. We talked about it, but they seemed to overcome it. Look, Gordon was 12 for 13 in game four, and then he had another good game in game five. Porter and Gordon shot 5 for 17 in the game. Nobody was making shots. Nobody was. I mean, they were down at 41% on their home court when they were at 55% over in the Timberwolves court. Remarkable, right? So they changed what they did defensively, and then everybody got involved. When Gobert made that shot, over by the Timberwolves bench, that fadeaway jumper, you almost say to yourself, well, this is just meant to be, right? I mean, this is some of those things you can't change.
Yeah, and you could tell too in the second half, it's like they cut the deficit back down to 15 to 12 to 10. They were just gaining confidence every single step of the way. They close out the win again, the defending champs out, which as we look ahead, Mavs, Timberwolves, that next set in the Western Conference Final, the T-Wolves, a minus 170 favorite, Mavericks plus 145. Game one coming up in Minnesota, the Timberwolves, a 4-point favorite, total 206.5. And now let's go to this Pacers-Knicks set. Tyrese Haliburton scores 26 points, and the Pacers set an NBA playoff record, shooting 67.1% from the field. They were 76.3% in the first half, the best by any team in a playoff half the last 25 years. And I want you to know this isn't coming from me. This is coming from producer Elliot, who pre-show in our meeting said, add Tyrese Haliburton to the list of players to make the conference finals before Joel Embiid. That's not me. That's Elliot, Michael. That's Elliot.
Add TJ McConnell getting to the conference finals too. Why don't we put him in there? He was a former 76er. Throw his butt in there too. You know, 24 minutes, 6 for 8. Why would we need that? 7 assists. Why would we want him on our team? I mean, seriously, I love it. Big Daddy texts me after the game. He's like, well, you know, TJ McConnell thinks he's a lot better than he really is. I don't know how he got that from just watching the game. I have no idea where that came from, but like, no, the guy's pretty good, Big Daddy. Like, you know, if he'd have been on your team, you would have loved him. I mean, I don't know how a team shoots 67% from the floor in a game. Look, you could say whatever you want about the Knicks. Were they tired? Sure. Did they start? You can't lose as many players. I mean, Bogdanovich doesn't play. They lose Mitchell Robinson, their main rim protector, right? You know, and so they lose him. And then, you know, I mean, Hart's trying to play. OG's trying to play. And then Brunson breaks his wrist. I mean, like, you just don't, like, there's no bench to go to, right? And so it's just they made their run. you know, and they're going to build off of it. I think we know now that they have the intangibles. I mean, DiVincenzo scores 39. I kept saying he had to be the guy. He ended up being the guy. Shoots 39, but I wasn't counting on Brunson only being able to play 29 minutes.
Yeah. Obviously, the injuries piled up for the Knicks. I think that OG Anunoby probably shouldn't have played. They were gunning from him right away as soon as he stepped out in warmups looking gimpy. But for this Pacers team that we talked so much in the lead up about how different they were offensively at home versus the road, to have that type of a shooting performance in the Garden, they were averaging like 104 points on the road. They put up 130, hold the Knicks to 109. And with that, so that record, that number, 130 points, tied for its most in NBA playoff game in franchise history, the most by any team in a Game 7 since the Lakers in 1966 against the Hawks. A remarkable performance. But now what's their reward? Going up and facing the Boston Celtics, who are a minus 1,000 favorite in the set. Michael, if you want to sprinkle on the Pacers, it's 7-1.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, the Pacers are growing up, and they obviously, the last two games, they played a physical style that we were not accustomed to seeing earlier in the tournament. I mean, they out-rebounded the Knicks again, 33-28 in this game. I thought they changed who they were. I think they became more physical. Now, are they going to be talented enough? Look, the one thing we do know about the Pacers, when Halliburton plays with that and that effort to the rim and being aggressive offensively, took 17 shots in 33 minutes. They're a good team to play. Just can they play good enough defense? That's the question.
Also, the first time Boston's had to play a healthy team. So their first real test so far of the postseason. We're just getting started here on the Lombardi Line. On the other side of the break, news or noise, the two-time defending champion Chiefs offseason takes another turn. And Tua's in the building in Miami. But what does it mean?
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
In addition to watching and listening to VSiN Live, don't forget about all the betting tools and content available at VSiN.com. Best bets from hosts and guests, betting splits, pro tips, and trends. And right now on the homepage, VSiN senior NBA analyst JVT has previews, picks, and predictions up already for the Eastern and Western Conference Finals. VSiN.com, your one-stop shop for all things betting content.
Is it news?
Corleone is a man who insists on hearing bad news immediately.
Or just noise?
Are you going to act like this is news?
Just noise.
Let's separate the impactful from the insignificant with one simple question. News or noise?
Let's get into it, Michael, because with 21 teams today opening up OTAs, we're already seeing Twitter take off. Bryce Young threw a 40-yard dime to Adam Thielen on 7-on-7. We got a taste of this in rookie minicamp when Caleb Williams, not a ball, hit the ground, right? We're also going to see plenty of reports on who's showing up to these voluntary workouts, who's not. News or noise, organized team activities are underway and the reports that follow them.
The reports are just noise because, remember, there's no contact. The last time I checked, and I don't know if this is going to stay the same, but football requires physical play and tackling. And if that element isn't in, everybody looks good. Look, when we were at the Raiders, we call them all Alameda. We had players that looked like they were incredible in Alameda. But once we went up to Napa, to the Marriott up there, and we had to put the pads on, all of a sudden all Alameda guys tend to fall apart. So it's just noise. It's great to hear, gets you real excited, but as a bettor and a betting network, if you fall for it, it's your own fault, right? If you fall for it, it's your own fault. You got to see it when a game's being played before you can fall for it.
Bryce Young, I'm happy for you, buddy. How many sacks did you take again last year? What's your win total? Oh, right. Okay. Moving ahead, the Dolphins and their quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa. Tua has been absent for the team's offseason program so far, but according to Diana Russini of The Athletic, he is there today for the start of Phase 3 and OTAs. There were plenty of questions about whether or not he would show up due to the ongoing contract negotiations. News or noise, Michael, Tua is in the building.
Noise. I mean, look, of course he's going to be in the building. You know, they picked up his fifth year. He has a contract. He's the team leader. He knows he's playing for the team. He's not going to hold out. Why not be in the building? And let's face it, they're not going to do much with him. The other factor is Chris Greer is his biggest cheerleader. I mean, they're going to pay him. They're going to pay him like he is a top two or three quarterback in the league. He'll pass Goff on money. They love him down there. They love everything about Tua. Now, I'm not sure everybody that's been through Miami agrees with that sentiment. However, Chris Greer's in charge of the team, and they're going to pay him heavy dollars. And when you watch Miami and you understand it, if you really study what they're doing, you know, Tua is an effective player against teams that don't understand what they do. But the key to their team is Waddle and Hill. Let's be clear. And when those two guys are humming, it's tough. 80% of their offense in the passing game goes to them. If they're not there, how good is Tua?
And you know what's interesting? You talk about teams who don't understand what they do. The bulk of them seem to be sub-500 teams, because last year, teams who had a 500 win percentage or worse, the Miami Dolphins were 10-1 against. Tua had 22 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. Opponents over 500, Miami was 1-6. He had 8 touchdowns and 7 picks in those games, where they were averaging just 16 points per game. Pick your poison there.
That's a great, great point. That's a great point. But deeper than that, it's when they play against teams that have veteran defensive safeties, people that can get that understand the scheme that Miami's running, understand and can communicate who's on the field, and alert the defense and line up in spots where he wants to throw the football, all of a sudden that offense isn't as effective. We saw Philadelphia, which wasn't a very good defensive team at all year, they handled them. So I think a lot of this is who they play. I think we have to keep this in mind during the season, because when they play against a veteran secondary and a veteran defensive coordinator, it won't be as good.
And I bring it up because they do have among the tougher schedules on paper. We know the AFC East opponents, but the NFC West, the AFC South, they get the 49ers, Rams, Seahawks, Texans, Jags, also at Cleveland on the schedule. Keep that in mind. Win total for Miami, 9.5. They're 2-1 in the AFC East, tied as the second shortest shot with the Jets. Okay, Chiefs offensive lineman Wanya Morris and Chu Godrick were arrested and since released for misdemeanor marijuana possession in Johnson City, Kansas on Friday. They have since been released from jail, not from the team. I want to make sure that I clarify that. Morris, a third round pick in 2023, is competing for the left tackle job. This adding to what's already been an eventful offseason for the two-time defending champs. We had Harrison Butker's comments go viral over the weekend. And of course, Rashee Rice's very serious ongoing legal issues. According to Adam Schefter, he's in the building today. But news or noise, Michael, the two-time defending champion Chiefs having another offseason distraction added to the list in this with Morris and Godrick.
Well, I think it's news. I mean, look, to let Rashee Rice come in the building, I think to me, wouldn't it be better off to just say, look, once you get this cleared, but to bring him in, I mean, it's so different. Andy gets away with this, Reed. He's been very good at this. So when they picked Tyreek Hill, there was not a lot of brushback on that. And it should have been, because he was off most teams' board because of his behavior, his horrendous behavior, let me underscore that, at Oklahoma State, which caused him to get thrown out of that school, was not allowed to apply to Akron, was not allowed to play at Western Alabama. So that's how severe that was. But yet the Chiefs don't catch any heat for that, right? And so it's interesting. You know, if this would have been, you know, if this is Cleveland, you know, I'm sure they would have given him a lot more grief. I don't know why Rice needs to be in there. I think he should take care of his legal, because those charges are serious, right? As for the marijuana thing, look, in Kansas, it's illegal. In Missouri, it's legal. I don't know what to make of that. I think we've changed the whole atmosphere on marijuana, which obviously in states it's legal. So how can you get mad at any player for that?
Yeah, just got to make sure you're on the right side of the border if you're carrying. Let's go to the Jets here, who have 6 primetime and 7 standalone games their first 11 weeks of the season, the most for any team since the 1970 merger. Last year, they had 5 games in primetime, but of course, didn't have Aaron Rodgers after he goes down in week 1. NFL VP of Broadcast Planning Mike North told reporters, yeah, it's an awful lot of primetime games early in the season, but obviously, I feel like the Jets kind of owe us. Is that news or noise, Michael?
I think it's kind of news. I really do. Like, what does he owe them? Like, what do they owe him? Does that mean the officials are going to be nice? I mean, don't put Scott Novak on that game. He's been practicing throwing his flag for 4 months. I mean, you know, I mean, seriously, are they going to call the game different because we have so many primetime games? I mean, that lends itself to a lot of conversations about what are they going to do, right? I mean, like, don't you feel that way, Stormy?
Well, I was like,
I think it's news, because why would you say it?
That's what I was thinking. I was like, the Jets, like, had a brutal year. They didn't want to be on primetime without Aaron Rodgers. They didn't want that to be the narrative about their season. But Okay, get the most bang for your buck and get those eyeballs on Aaron Rodgers, who, by the way, even money to be comeback player of the year, 16-1 in the MVP market. Let's stick with the quarterbacks here. When Kirk Cousins first spoke to reporters after signing with the Falcons this offseason, some of his comments about having spoken to the team's head athletic trainer as well as director of player personnel, Ryan Pace, raised some red flags within the league regarding tampering and violating league rules. When Cousins was asked about the status of the investigation, he said, "They're still kind of going through that, so I'll let them do it. But there's not a whole lot there." News or noise, Michael? Cousins saying there's not a whole lot there. Interesting choice of words.
Yeah, it is, but I mean, there has to be a lot there because of how quickly. Well, but considering that they're a Super Bowl winning organization get things done at such a rapid rate, you can understand why the Falcons were able to get this done so quickly. I mean, nobody else would have been able to do it. But now that you add the context of how tremendous they are, from their Super Bowl winning general manager, Terry Fontenot, to the cap man of the year, Chris Olsen, maybe that explains everything.
Plus, there's the Kyle Pitts part of it I didn't even mention. He also admitted to calling Bears wide receiver Darnell Mooney. That was a part of him ultimately ending up in Atlanta. There's a lot of layers to this bad boy. So to say there's not a whole lot there. Yeah. Interesting. How about in New England? Patriots quarterback Jacoby Brissett was very complimentary of his new head coach, told ESPN that he brings a lot of good energy. The cool thing is you can tell he's trying to make the players on the team run the team. He's the head coach and sets the standard, but he puts a lot of responsibility on us players, and I like it. Are Brissett's comments on Mayo's coaching style news or noise?
Well, I mean, it's news because we know what his style is, but can it work, right? I mean, that whole term players coach, I would love to do a complete dossier and study on that. You know, I mean, if you listen to anything that Deion says about player coaches at Colorado, when he's talking to his coaching staff, it's completely different. And this is coming from an ex-player. So I'm not sure I've ever seen it that, you know, let the team run the team. Yeah, I think there has to be an element of culture that has to be run by the players and has to be set by the players. But the actual the installation of the culture and the ability to carry the culture out on a daily basis, if the head coach isn't monitoring that, it's hard.
Yeah, installing a new culture, replacing Bill Belichick, developing a new rookie quarterback, a lot of layers to what's going on in New England. And how are they rewarded for their hardships, Michael? One of the toughest schedules in the league. And they're tied with the Panthers to have the fewest wins in the league, plus 450 that price. Their win total, 4.5. They're the favorite to be the last winless team as well at plus 750. And we'll dive into the specifics of New England's schedule a little bit later on in the show. When we come back on the Lombardi Line, we go behind the counter with Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata. How'd the books make out on last night's NBA chaos and more?
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
You know we here at VSiN in the Lombardi Line are always trying to help you out, and we have a very special deal for our annual subscription, usually $240. You can grab it now for just $199. Sign up today. We're also giving you an extra 2 months for free. So that's 14 months of VSiN Pro access, less than 50 cents a day, but you need to use our promo code for this show, Lombardi. With VSiN Pro, you'll gain instant access to our daily best bets with a leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand, betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for each and every game, betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video access. VSiN.com/subscribe is how you can claim your 14 months of VSiN Pro for $199, but you got to use that promo code Lombardi. This is the Lombardi Line alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. And it's time now to head behind the counter. Welcome in great friend of the show, Thomas Gable, on the Progressive Guest Line, director of the Race and Sportsbook out there at the Borgata in Atlantic City. Last night in the NBA, TG, both underdogs on the road, win straight up in game sevens. Something in a game seven we haven't seen in NBA postseason history. It was awesome, unless you were the Nuggets and the Knicks. How did it make out for you guys at the book?
Well, with the Knicks going down, that pretty much solidified a win in the NBA, no matter what happened in the Nuggets game last night for us. I mean, you feel bad for the Knicks just because of how many injuries that they've had to deal with. And then obviously with the broken bone there in Brunson's hand yesterday was kind of just the topper. So Even if they were somehow able to get back into that game and come away with a victory, it would have been tough sledding for them against Boston. You didn't want to see a MASH unit going up against the Celtics. So at least you have a healthy Pacers team heading to the Eastern Conference Finals here. Hats off, though, to the Knicks for what they were able to do and piece together through the playoffs. And but here's the Pacers and Michael's man, TJ McConnell, now into the Eastern Conference Finals, not as a member of the Sixers, but as a member of the Pacers. So,
yeah,
good to see TJ there.
Why would we want a good player like that anyway? I mean, we had Ben Simmons. That's all we need. You know, TJ's made it to the finals. How about setting? Let's talk about the Minnesota-Dallas price. You know, I think Dallas being here probably surprised some people because of mm-hmm. their ability to handle Oklahoma in six. I mean, that was pretty impressive. They came from behind in that game. And P.J. Washington making the two free throws. But what have you set this line at in terms of the opening night and the series price? And then are you getting a lot of action on this game?
So the opening game for game one, Timberwolves are favored by 4. And it's been early Timberwolves money. Not a ton of action real early yet on that game as it's a couple nights away. But early money's been on Minnesota there. For the series price, Timberwolves $1.85 favorites right now. And I think the defense of Minnesota will be what stands out here in this series. The Dallas role players that played so well against OKC, they need to do it again. PJ Washington, Derek Jones Jr., Derek Lively, these guys have to step up while Minnesota really keys in on Luka and Kyrie. They were able to do that against Oklahoma City. They're going to have to do it again in another series. But make no mistake here, Minnesota is the deeper team. They have the guys who can step up the defensive intensity. If the offense for Minnesota, which does have a tendency to be a little streaky at times, if that can remain steady, Minnesota is rightfully favored here in this series. From our perspective, we would love to see a Mavericks victory in this series. There's a huge swing between these two in the future pool in terms of who comes out of the Western Conference. So we certainly need the Mavs from the books perspective, but Timberwolves should rightfully be favored in this series.
Speaking of futures, there was a lot of talk around if there was a team from the Western Conference that could compete with the Boston Celtics for an NBA title, it was the Denver Nuggets. They beat them twice in the regular season. Mm-hmm. With Denver out now, how are the Celtics being played? Are they still taking money as an odds-on favorite to win it all right now, maybe even more so now that Denver's out?
They are. I mean, they've been taking money all season, Stormy, and it hasn't slowed down through the playoffs. And I think number one, the path that they had through the Eastern Conference obviously has been pretty nice if you're a Boston fan. I mean, not too many roadblocks there in the Eastern Conference that they had to go up against, and now they have the Pacers, which, I mean, listen, I think when you look at this series with Indiana, Boston was 3-2 on the season against the Pacers. Now, Pascal Siakam played in only one of those five meetings, and that was a 129-124 win for Boston at home. I think the offense of Indiana can certainly keep up with Boston. The issue here will be the defense or lack thereof from the Pacers. We know the Celtics have such an efficient offense, and going up against one of the worst playoff defensive teams in the Pacers, there's obviously a the Boston is rightfully favored in a big way. We have them currently priced -900 for the series. They're big favorites here in game one. A lot of folks have them at 10. We have them priced right now 9.5. We did get some Pacers money at 10. So we're currently 9.5 for game one tomorrow night. I think you're going to see, again, with the way that the defense is played on an Indiana side, you're going to see a lot of points. We saw a lot of points in many of those five games this year between these two, 221.5, 222 out there, depending where you're shopping for the first game total. And you're going to see money to the over, I think, especially in this series. I think that's the way bettors are going to be looking at it and really looking to hit the over.
All right, speaking of overs, the schedule came out on Thursday, obviously, and the flights to Brazil are packed for the first week of September out of Philadelphia. Did any of those, the scheduling change your over and under projections?
Only one, Michael, and you could probably take a guess which one that is. The team that
the Chicago Bears?
No, it was actually Pittsburgh.
I was going to say the Steelers because their road is so tough.
Yes. Yeah, that end of the season there for them is obviously just brutal. We did change the juice 5 cents there on Chicago, Michael, to your point, but we actually did lower the win total for the Steelers from 8.5 down to 7.5. And it's just that end of the season schedule there, very brutal. And not only between the teams, but also just the scheduling and how many games they have to play within a certain number of days there. So those were the only two teams that were really affected in terms of their season win totals here. We do have up, obviously, the lines for week one for NFL. As you said, Michael, the Eagles, they're going to Brazil that first Friday night against the Packers. Currently, Philly, only 1.5-point favorites, and that total's 48.5. And again, believe me, when we put up week one lines, the fact that it's May, a lot of people don't want to tie up their money for close to 4 months for a single game. It's not like betting a future where you're following something for a season-long bet. This is a one-game thing, so you don't see a ton of money come rushing in on NFL week one when you put up the lines, unlike college football, which there's probably a little bit more edge there for players when you put up those week zero and game of the year lines for college football. Guys can find edges in those, and those markets move a lot more than the NFL week one market does. And obviously, we still have training camp and a long way to go here for week one games. So you're not seeing a ton of action right now come in on week one. You're getting some here and there, but it's nothing that is really going to affect numbers too much.
Before we go, TG, Xander Schauffele no longer has to take the most backhanded compliment in golf that he's the best player without a major. He finally got one. But because of how many top tens he's had and runner-ups and not getting over the hump, was that a really good result for you guys? Because I know a lot of bettors that have just steered off of betting Schauffele because he hadn't been able to get there.
Yeah, it really was. He was a very good result pre-flop for us. He was a good result live in tournament. Really, the guy that was taking money live during the tournament was Shane Lauer, especially after that round on Saturday. He was getting hit pretty hard. So while we were good on Lauer pre-tournament, liability started to build up on him during the tournament. But Schauffele, a very good result for us. And good to see him be able to handle that pressure in the final round. I mean, he had to make that putt there to do it and avoid the playoff with DeChambeau. And with the way DeChambeau played yesterday and Schauffele's history, huge putt for him to make.
No doubt about it. Thanks, TG, as always. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, TG.
Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata out there in Atlantic City. Always appreciate his insight taking us behind the counter. When we come back to the NFL, the Ravens had more wins than anybody in the league last year at 13-4. They're plus 550 to do it again. But given the tough division with which they play, is there another team poised to knock them off the regular season wins pedestal?
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're so close to crowning an NBA champion. And with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New to DraftKings? Listen up. New customers can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500. Just deposit at least $5, and you'll get a bonus bet back equal to your first bet, even if it doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code VSIN, V-S-I-N. The crown is yours? And who will the crown go to in the NFL for most regular season wins in 2024? It was the Ravens last year, and we'll talk about them. We'll talk about a lot of the contenders later on in the show, Michael. We're going to do the reverse of this exercise and talk about the teams that we expect to have the fewest wins and to be the last winless team on the board. But let's start at the top, the upper echelon. With the Kansas City Chiefs, the favorite to have the most regular season wins at plus 475. Baltimore to do it 2 years in a row, plus 550. Tied with the 49ers, also plus 550. The Lions and Bengals both there at 9-1. With the Ravens, Michael, it was interesting looking at their schedule last year. They were actually better on the road than they were at home. 7-1 away from Baltimore, 6-3 at home. And three of their four losses were in that division. We talk so much about how difficult the North is. They almost all their losses came from within that division. So that's baked into it a little bit here, too. What do you think about those upper echelon contenders for most regular season wins? Or should we look farther down the board?
Well, let's start with the Ravens, because last year the leading rusher on the team was Lamar Jackson. He had 148 carries, 821 yards. He averaged 5.5 yards. They signed Derrick Henry. I don't think Lamar is going to be carrying it 148 times. I'm sure he's going to carry it 100 times, but 148, I don't think so. Is he going to lead the team in rushing again? I don't think so. I think they'll slow the game down. I think losing McDonald causes some concern, especially against the good offenses of the North. Cincinnati, we're not sure whether Cleveland's a good offense or not as they continually change their coaching staff. And then Pittsburgh, which we know, whatever they look like on offense, they're always a hard out. So I'm a little bit worried about Baltimore. They may, by the end of the year, be a better team because of the integration of what they're doing. But remember, now that news defensive coordinator Zach Orr, 3 years as a coach in the league, even though he played, that's a challenge for me to come back and replace a really good coach like McDonald. Kansas City, I think, is living, you know, I hate to sound like John Bon Jovi, but I think they're living on an edge here a little bit because, you know, I know they brought Rice back in, but let's be clear. You know, they haven't done anything to improve that wide receiver room. I know, you know, people think, well, they drafted Worthy and they got Hollywood Brown. I'm not sure those are answers, right? And so Kelsey's another year older. We don't know who the left tackle is. We know this, that they have to win with their defense last year, and Mahomes was sensational. So I don't think you can rule them out, but I think there are going to be some stumbling blocks, as we can see by this offseason. As we move forward, you know, I would stay away from any team having the most wins from the North because as much as I like Cincinnati, I can't imagine that you can go through the North as tough as the North is and be able to have the most wins in the league. I think it's a testament. If you do it, it's a testament to how good your team is.
I agree. And also, just while we're on these top teams, the Ravens, I have their schedule pulled up here. Two of their losses were against the Steelers, albeit one of those wins was week 18 when Lamar Jackson wasn't playing. But that's that one. And then they lost 33-31 to the Browns. Their other loss was an early season game to the Colts in overtime. All their losses were close. So let's see if they're even close to the level that they displayed last year. The Ravens opened the schedule at Kansas City, who the Chiefs have a tough opening back-to-back weeks. They're a 3-point favorite against the Ravens, then a 4-point favorite against the Bengals. At least they get both those games at home. Then at Atlanta, which we expect to be much improved. The Chargers, which we don't know what they're going to be just yet. Saints early bye. And then coming out of the bye is when they get San Francisco, so they'll be well prepared for that game. They do have some tough road contests at San Francisco, like I mentioned, at Buffalo, at Cleveland, at Pittsburgh. The lead dog, as usual, in the AFC West, but I wanted to ask you about this one because I mentioned the Buffalo game. I didn't get to this in News or Noise earlier, but do we think it is a coincidence, Michael, that November 17th, Taylor Swift just happens to be in Toronto, a quick 2-hour drive from Buffalo when they're hosting the Chiefs. And that happens to be the one day off that she has while she's up there in Toronto. Like, the league is saying no, but I find that extremely hard to believe.
Well, look, let's just be clear and defend the league. I mean, when you're Taylor Swift, there is no limit to where you can get to it, whether it's 2 hours by car. I mean, when you have one of those, she has one of those big, big planes. I mean, she don't have like a little one. She has one of those big ones, right? She doesn't need refueling wherever she goes. She can go anywhere. So, like, the world is flat to her. So I don't think that's, you know, but it does. I mean, look, let's face it. you know, I'm sure the networks appreciate that she'll be at that game, because the over-under count on how many times they're going to show the booth of what she's in, like when she was there with Jason Kelce. Remember they were in Buffalo together there again? How many times do we watch her in there? So, yeah, I think there's a little bit of, yeah, this works for everybody.
I mean, one executive called the cap increase this past year the Taylor Swift surplus. So I'm sure they would like to have her on their television screens as much as possible. But to go back to the regular season wins of it all, Michael, and last undefeated team. So you say stay away from the North because there's, you know, inevitably you're going to get tripped up within the division. How many times is a big question mark? The 49ers, we talked about last week when the schedule came out, they have that tough stretch of opponents that are all coming off of a bye. It's, you know, I know there's a will they, won't they even go over their season win total. So maybe that's not the way that you want to play that. Buffalo has a lot of question marks. What about Detroit sitting there at 9-1, though? Does that intrigue you at all?
Well, I mean, the NFC North plays, they play the West, the NFC West hard. They play the AFC South, not as hard, right? And they play their 17th game will be against the best team in the AFC Northeast. So that's a hard schedule, right? You know, I know we have the schedule out there, but I think when you look at it in terms of the divisions you play, the West, you feel like three games could be really challenging. The East, you know, the South, they could probably win those. I just feel like Detroit with the North, with Green Bay and the rivalries, those games are so hard. And I think the other thing is, too, is this end of the year, where the season's so long, I think teams would rather rest than be undefeated. I really do. I think it's almost a relief to not have to go into the week 15 as an undefeated team. I think it's so damn hard nowadays. So I think the best record is different, certainly. And where will the best record come from? I think it's going to come from a team that's playing like a fairly easier schedule in the sense of, you know, when you look at the AFC South, they got to play the North. The AFC North plays amongst themselves. I think it's the, you know, like, could it be Buffalo? Because the Buffalo plays the AFC South and they play the NFC West. Hmm. And, you know, they should be able to handle most of those teams in there.
Buffalo 13-1. They had 11 wins a season ago. Were able to put things together the back end of the season. Three teams last year, all with 12-5 seasons. Detroit, who I mentioned, the San Francisco 49ers, and the Dallas Cowboys. And we talk about the Cowboys all in on paper, yes, with the free agents that walked away and the things that they have in, I mean, or haven't done, I guess, in general this offseason, leads you to believe they're going to be worse, not better. But three straight 12-win seasons for the Cowboys, could they do it again and be considered a contender in this last-ditch effort? Mike McCarthy trying to keep his job, all the contracts that they have to get in for the coaching staff and for the players. They're 20-1 for most regular season wins. Last undefeated team odds, the San Francisco 49ers are the favorite, plus 750. Lions 8-1. Miami 10-1 with the schedule they have out the gates. Same thing there with Kansas City, which surprised me that they're so short on the board given the couple tough teams that they have right out the gates with the Ravens and Bengals. Green Bay 13-1, Cincinnati 14-1. And then is 14-1, Michael, enough for you to say there could be a team this year that could go 17-0, or would you need a way bigger price to place that bet?
I would need a way bigger price because, like, let's just take the Bengals. I think when you're looking at this list, you got to say the Bengals start slow, right? The 49ers start slow. We've seen this before, right? They don't play their best early. They have long seasons. Baltimore likes to start fast, right? Philly, you know, Philly's a little bit, they're going to be interesting. Do they change how they practice? Their team wasn't in great shape. The Texans, we know they'll probably try to start fast. I think the Jets, it's imperative that they start fast. They have to build confidence quickly. You know, they just have a tough road ahead when they open up with the Niners on the road. That's going to be not an easy game. But to me, like, I would stay away from the Bengals because I know Zach Taylor, typically they don't play their best early in the year. And it's hard. It's really the way the rules are, it's difficult to be undefeated because you don't have enough practice time in training camp.
The Falcons, we know, have not made the playoffs in a long time. They're 13-1 for most regular season wins, though, and considered on paper to have the easiest strength of schedule this year, of course, being the leader in the clubhouse in the NFC South, which is the worst division in football right now. Again, we will redo this exercise later on in the program, but with those teams on the bottom, I think that'll actually potentially be a little bit more fun because we've had so much conversation over the past week about who will be that team that's getting the top overall pick next season. We're going to hit the break here. When we come back, we're resetting for hour two and find out what's on Michael's mind this Monday. We'll be right back.